Hey everyone, it's Carolyn Ahrens here, and it is my pleasure to once again have Emily Griffin with me. How you doing, Emily?
I'm doing just fine, thanks, Carolyn.
That is awesome. I would ask you how your Christmas was, but the truth is we're recording this for January, but we haven't had Christmas yet. We're actually talking in December, and we have to be honest, right? So, but hopefully.
But Christmas is always lovely.
It is indeed. And hopefully by the time our fearless readers hear this, they will have had a wonderful Christmas and be enjoying the beginning of the new year. So, and they will be reading, they'll have read a bunch more of the invitations from your beautiful book. And so I thought maybe I could, we could have some more conversation. But
good. Wonderful.
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, this chunk that we've just been reading is from how our prayer can become work through the prayer of the ordinary, through surprises that emerge, through the prayer of examine, the prayer of heightened consciousness. And then next week we go into the prayer of daily routine. And it seems to me that all of these invitations are this wonderful flow into prayer in ordinary life, you know, just not making it too fancy. And it made me want to ask you about kind of the relationship between structure and spontaneity in prayer. How we want to be people who pray without ceasing, and yet we know we need structure, and how those two things interrelate. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, my thought about that is that it's very confusing, but it works. I think that being too structured is a problem. And that's a real temptation in the spiritual life. When we get, you know, into, you mentioned spreadsheets.
Great.
And I think that that's over structure. And spontaneity is a kind of an antidote to that. But without structure, we really are not able to pray.
Right.
So I think both are needed, and both are necessary, and they sort of work together in the spiritual life.
Yeah. And do you think that sort of moment by moment, kind of Brother Lawrence's practicing God's presence, that it gets easier and easier the more that you also implement set aside time? Like, they seem to have a symbiotic relationship, would you think?
I agree. Yeah. I really love Brother Lawrence. And I didn't know about Brother Lawrence for the longest time. And then I finally discovered him and I went, oh, of course, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
And he was always praying in the middle of things.
You know, there's a metaphor you offer. Now I'm cheating and I'm going ahead. We haven't asked our readers to read this chapter yet, but I'm looking for where it is. I think it's almost at the end of the book in your invitation called Unceasing Prayer, where you have the bike metaphor. That
yes.
With that you pedal on a bike and then you can coast. And to me, it's like the I just love that. And I think I'm understanding it right, that the times that I am intentional about, these kind of set aside times for praying, are the pedaling, but then they allow me to just ride the bike the rest of the day because I've already oriented my heart towards God. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. I love it. I've never heard that metaphor before. It's going to be my new one.
I don't do very much with bikes anymore, but at one time I was quite a biker, so it really made sense to me then. That's a very good metaphor, if I do say so myself.
I think you should. I love it. My husband is a very avid mountain biker. And in fact, uh-huh. if he was on this call with us, he would make the case that you should have, I think you have 50 chapters. He would say that there should be 51, and number 51 should be the invitation of mountain biking prayer. He says it's all his best praying.
Well, we'll leave that to him.
Yes, yes. But he will love this metaphor. I think that's really helpful because I have definitely noticed that when I build in structured times for prayer, then all the remaining unstructured times are more prayerful. And yeah. And to think of the structured times as pedaling and the rest of my day as getting to coast on the bike. I love that. So thank you for the gift of that. A little bit later in our reading for next week, you give us these wonderful exemplars of little ways of prayer. Brother Lawrence, Thomas Kelly, Frank Lobbock, Teresa of Lisieux. And then you mentioned Gerard Manley Hopkins, which just made me about break my face from grinning because he's my absolute favorite poet. And I wanted to put you on the spot and ask if you have a favorite Gerard Manley Hopkins poem.
The world is filled with the grandeur of God. It will shake out like shining from ship foil. I can't remember the rest.
Me either, but I love it. So what we'll do is we'll share this poem the week that we post this podcast. Because absolutely. It's something about the world is smeared and trod. But underneath, there's something underneath is I wish we could remember it right off the top because it's the spirit is hovering over the world with bright wings, something like that. But
bright wings.
That's right. With bright wings.
Yes. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful, it's a sonnet, I think.
Love it. Well, thank you. Yeah, well, this is a good excuse to post it that week. And do you have other favorite poets? Your writing is so poetical. It makes me
curious. I love poetry. Yeah. I love poetry, and I've read a lot of poetry. And I've one of the poets that particularly affects me is T.S. Eliot. I noticed that they have a new. It's a movie, or if it's a theater production. Judi Dench and James Corden and but at any rate, I love T.S. Eliot and I use a lot of his phrases for prayer.
Hmm.
So I think he's very good. And I use the other poet that I particularly like is Pablo Neruda. And in translation, I can also read some of the Spanish, but it's better in Spanish than it is in English. Mm-hmm. But he is a wonderful poet. And I should mention Emily Dickinson also. Mm-hmm. She's a poet.
Wonderful leads. Maybe we can post some samples the week that this comes out. Thank you. I like the idea of being able to pray some lines of poetry too. And then it's striking to me after this. You know, we get these several invitations in a row about the little way and the prayer of the ordinary. And then you give us a wonderful counterbalance and you zoom out and you give us some invitations to do with large scale vision and imagination and metaphor. I love that. One of my absolute favorite ideas is that Jesus comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comfortable, like sort of whatever end of the imbalance we're on, he comes in and provides the counterbalance. And so I feel like your book is doing that. You know, if we're too big picture, you're inviting us into the details. And if we're losing sight of the big picture, then you're inviting us into large scale vision. It's a wonderful counterbalance. One of the questions I had for you from the imagination chapter, you have, I'll read you a little bit where you say, how can we believe in the old fashioned God in a world of new discovery? No doubt we need a new fashioned God, an expanding religious imagination. I absolutely love that quote. It really resonated, but I could immediately hear, you know, the folks I know who would read that and say, a new fashion God, what is this? And so I wanted to ask you how we can live into an expanding religious imagination while not, you know, while avoiding heresy or becoming unorthodox, if you had any coaching for us on that.
I really think that the new fashioned God and the old fashioned God are the same God.
Right.
And, you know, there's only one God. I think that the fact that modern science has expanded our vision is definitely true. The point is that God is infinite, and we have a tendency to make him small.
Right.
And so we need a small God because we can identify with a small God. But the truth of the matter is that God is very large, and infinite is really the best expression.
Right.
So one of the theology professors that I had said that the best thing to say about God is that God is.
Hmm.
And so I really believe that you know, the more we know about God, the larger he becomes.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it is to magnify the Lord, right? Is allow
yes.
our vision of him to become bigger and bigger and bigger. I love that. So it's not God it's changing. It's just our map, our perception should be growing and growing. Yeah. Well, and I think you really speak to this idea of our growing our vision of God in the metaphor chapter when you talk about how even new discoveries in science, you talked about like how computer scientists were saying that there was something about a computer chip that was helping them understand better, giving them a vision, an analog for how God could be present to all people at all time. And
yes.
I love the idea that God would continue to reveal new windows into understanding who he is as we learn new things about his world. That's neat. Yeah. And then a couple of invitations later is your chapter on interceding. And you tell that great story about being at a prayer retreat where they stopped several times through the day to pray for specific needs in their city.
Yes.
Which I love. It makes me want to do that at the next prayer retreat I'm on. And one of the things that was really striking to me from that chapter was when you said many causes that seem limited and local are actually global. And you talked about, you know, praying for brownouts in California, but how that leads into prayer for energy crises around the world. And that
yeah.
really, really spoke to me because I know when I'm coaching Renovare Institute students, they all do a big project at the end of their studies, which is how they're working on some way that they're going to pass on what they've learned in their own context, in their own community. And one of my pieces of advice to them is always don't do this project for some imagined generic audience, do it for people you know, for a community that you're actually part of. And then when I was reading your chapter on interceding, I thought, I wonder if that's important in prayer, that we pray in the concrete more than in the abstract, like for people we actually know, for situations we're actually aware of, and then trust that.
Yes, I think that's right. I don't think I said that anywhere, but I think that's right, that we pray, and the more concrete our prayer is, the more universal it is.
Yeah.
But I think that for us, with our limited imaginations, praying for one person or for several people that we know is a very good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and leads us into prayer for the world. But if we just sort of pray generically for the world, it's kind of hard to get that incarnated.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I completely agree.
Well, I think I got it from you. You did say that, but it was very striking to me. So thank you for that in that chapter. And then the last one that our club will be reading this upcoming week is the one on repetition. And Chris Hall, who is the current president of Renovare and a wonderful patristic scholar, he's always teaching us repetitio mater studiorum est. Repetition is the mother of all learning. Yeah.
And yes, that's right.
And when I was reading that, it made me think of somewhere earlier in the book, you talk about praying familiar prayers, and you have this really neat way of talking about it where you say when you're praying a familiar prayer, then the prayer strand goes over the memory strand, and you're learning and relearning at the same time. And I wonder, have you spent any time in brain science, or it sounded like There was.
I got very interested in brain science at one stage. I don't think I'm. I became a brain scientist, but I think I was very interested in brain science, and they know a lot more about the brain than they used to know, and so a lot of what they know is very applicable to prayer. And so I think that the answer is yes. Yes, I was interested in brain science, and but I don't think it's the be all and the end all. I think that the prayer is more inclined to be global than the brain is.
Right, right. Yeah, but I still think it's cool how, you know, the God who made us, it makes sense to me that prayer would be helpful to our brains as well as to the rest of us, you know?
Yes, I think so.
It was striking to me again later in the book, parts that the readers haven't got to yet, but you have a chapter on transformation and you talk about how Gerald May lists some of the things that happen to a person who spends a lot of time in contemplation. And again, it made me, all this kind of brain science was rushing into the background for me. So readers who are interested in neuroplasticity and brain science, I think you'll find some riches here. And I thought I heard that in the memory strand and the new strand. So thank you for that. It was really interesting. As we look at the future invitations, I just wanted to ask you about meditation and contemplation. It seems to me like most spiritual writers use those terms in a bunch of kind of elastic ways. And I was wondering in your mind, if how you use the term meditation and how you use the term contemplation, are they the same thing or do you have clear categories for them?
Well, I think that contemplation is probably the highest form of prayer. Most authorities say it is.
Hmm.
And but I think that you can jump from a very low form of prayer, like
emergency. Yeah.
Emergencies into contemplation very easily because the more you know about God, the more he invites you to pray.
Right.
And so I think that contemplation is very worthwhile and very desirable and very enjoyable sometimes.
And can you...
Meditation is more structure, I think, than contemplation. Mm-hmm. But that's the only distinction I would notice. And I think that the terms are interchangeable for most authorities.
Gotcha. Do you think the impression I was getting reading later sections in your book is that maybe meditation involves more words? We're still processing in terms of words, and contemplation gets to somewhere a little bit more wordless. Is that fair, or am I just importing that in?
No, that's just right, actually.
Yeah.
And I think contemplation is wordless.
Yeah.
And meditation is meditating on the word.
Hmm. And then
the word is very large. In the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. So that's very large.
Yeah. There's a lot to meditate on there. Yeah. But then we may end up, as we're meditating in contemplation, which is this just wordlessly enjoying God.
Is that yes. Right?
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Maybe I could ask you, Emily, since writing this book on prayer, and this might be hard to remember. I always find it hard to remember my own biography, but since writing this book on prayer, is there anything you've discovered about prayer that you would want to add to it?
I think that prayer is glorious and diverse and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I don't think there's anything new about prayer. I think it's wonderfully old. And it's both old and new, and as God is.
Yeah.
And So I don't think there's anything I've discovered since I wrote that book that I've learned about prayer, except that it's good to aspire and it's good to rejoice. And all of those are aspects of prayer.
Well, thank you, Emily. It's been so good to talk with you. Are you willing to come back in a few weeks and answer reader questions?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, I will still look forward to talking with you then. Blessings.
Okay, great.